Spokane Symphony is going to be building part of its program this weekend around Shakespeare, and Tchaikovsky certainly loved Shakespeare, as did Verdi, as have done so many creative people. It's a concert which includes the Hamlet overture, as well as the almost obligatory piece to be played around Valentine's Day of Romeo and Juliet, and then a little bit of Berlioz and a cello concerto will be played by Mason Bates. Here to kind of talk about that and also much more is a member of the Spokane Symphony who's always fun to have around, Lynn Feller-Marshall. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning, Vern.
And, you know, we don't have to follow any rules or anything, so I want to think a little bit about the members of the Spokane Symphony, because we hear you play, we see you, and we try to figure out who you are from your body language on stage and all of those things, but there's oh so much more. You came here all those years ago as a kid out of Juilliard that entered an audition and got a gig?
Pretty much a kid. Yeah. I actually started as third bassoon.
Oh, so you came kind of on the speculation of a very small job with very little remuneration.
Yes, I sent in a recording, in fact, because 3,000 miles was pretty far to fly for a third bassoon position.
Yeah, and so you came here and played third bassoon that year, and I think you were part of a chamber music group that kind of came here, weren't you?
Yes, we played a little bit here. It was a trio, two clarinets and bassoon. Really beautiful combination.
And then from there, did you stay around continuously or did you go away and come back?
Actually, I decided that I was missing too much work back in New York to continue to come out here. Mm-hmm. So I gave up that position. Unknowingly, the principal, my predecessor, Wendell Jones, had decided that enough was enough and he was going to retire. And since I was no longer occupying it, he requested to be moved back to third bassoon.
Wow.
Then I came, auditioned, and won his job. So they were completely separate. But I think it's the only time I've ever heard of where two players have actually reversed positions in the same orchestra.
What a great story. It was kind of, I mean, it really must have felt kind of magic and wonderful in that way.
It was. And Wendell and Virginia were fantastic human beings. They really made me feel welcome. Mm-hmm. And I noticed also they made other younger players that came to the orchestra feel welcome as well.
Mm-hmm. And that was, you were kind of the first round of the immigration, if we can say. You know, we fortunately have not kept out the immigrants because an awful lot of people since you've come have come into the
immigrants.
Symphony.
Yeah. Definitely. Bruce Bodden and Keith Thomas came before I did. Mm-hmm. And just fantastic players. So when I came here playing third, I thought, wow, I mean, this flute player and this oboist, they're fantastic. I mean, this is way better an orchestra than I ever imagined. Mm-hmm. I had to look at Spokane on a map to find where
course.
It was, being from the east. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was just blown away.
Yeah. And then, so then you became the first bassoon. And then, as will happen with young people, you and a certain cellist caught each other's eye somehow.
We did. John loves to tell the story that we were backing the Moody Blues.
Oh, okay.
So
well,
Spokane Symphony out of the Gorge.
There you go. Okay, it's getting better by the moment.
Yep. And I was supposed to give him my one-page resume to give to the folks out at Eastern. And he opened it and read all about me. Resealed it in a new envelope and handed it in, which I thought was really funny. This came out a week before we were married.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. That's pretty great. And so you got married, so we had a couple and in the symphony, and you were also saying that was kind of the beginning of the onslaught of couples meeting in the Spokane Symphony.
Mm-hmm. That's great. There have since been several couples who have met and married and that are still here, which is fantastic.
You have to have somebody to talk to during the during the breaks in the rehearsal, right?
It's kind of fun because we talk about kids. Mm-hmm. We talk about raising kids, what it's like to do that as a musician.
Well, yeah, and that's obviously the inevitable result of a whole bunch of couples coming into the symphony, because then you do have a whole generation of symphony kids coming along, don't you?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Boy, there's just a fantastic little group now. I would say, I can't even remember how many kids, but under the age of 7, there's quite a collection.
Yeah. And then again, because you were of hate to say this about you, a previous generation. Your kids are growing up. Your son is just, well, he's now a member of the Spokane Symphony, isn't he? You're a substitute member.
Yeah, he's not contracted. Mm-hmm. He did make the substitute list, mm-hmm. which is great. He is just he's an amazingly strong player. I think every time I hear him play now, he just sounds better all the time. Mm-hmm. It's almost odd hearing your own child play that well.
It would. Yeah, it would be. And that's on the viola. And then throughout all this, he's been a really great musical generalist, hasn't he?
Yeah.
What doesn't he play, or hasn't he played?
Yeah, he plays just about everything, accompanies bassoon students. He's fantastic using music notation software, mm-hmm. super fast, mm-hmm. as you would expect mm-hmm. from someone who's 18. So he does a lot of that as well, arranges. He's even arranged for large ensemble bassoons for Bassoonorama. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just an absolute music geek mm-hmm. and just loving all of it.
And then being her own independent person, your daughter found a really interesting different path. What was the cart and the horse of you moving from Brown's Addition to an amazing place out in the country?
It has been a blast. It's been a lot of work.
Mm-hmm, of course.
But we have moved out to the country largely so that our daughter could have animals. So she has now combined her huge love of visual arts with her huge love of animals. So she has goats, some really fantastic little ones, just darling, and a couple of big ones. She's got a big pet, and he follows her around like a dog. And we have a fair amount of poultry. So we're now on a small scale, we're now in the egg business.
Nice. Lynn Feller Marshall, who's married to the cellist, the principal cellist, John Marshall, and then their two kids. And before, we'll eventually get to the point and talk about the concert maybe. But but describe the challenges, the joys of being a couple in similar but slightly different roles and raising your kids and keeping your profession going. It seems like it's mostly worked with you, hasn't it?
It has mostly worked. I made the decision pretty early on that I would not seek a full-time job per se in addition to both of us being in the symphony. My husband's full-time, and that's plenty mm-hmm. because of being both principal and full-time. So I've been the sort of doing everything else mm-hmm. parent, lots
sure,
of kid driving.
The taxi driver. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. A lot of that. It's been fun. I've loved it. It's very, very busy. So trying to find a 2-hour slot of time ever is a real challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As into practice or some such a thing.
Practice reads, mm-hmm. spending time with your kids. Mm-hmm. A lot of our communication happens in the car. And I think that's pretty normal for American families.
Yeah, probably is.
And we text each other.
Sure. And then with the longer drive, you get even a little bit longer in the car.
Yeah, which has actually been kind of nice.
With your amazing place living in two geodesic domes.
Yeah. They look like igloos right now.
Yeah.
It's a nice pair of igloos.
I'm sure they do. Lynn Feller Marshall, who's been playing in the symphony for all these years as principal bassoonist. Let's talk a little bit about the next two concerts coming along. Tchaikovsky's just always something that makes one smile to play, isn't it?
It does. I would be happy playing Tchaikovsky for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And he was partial to the woodwinds. So he wrote a lot of really great stuff for woodwinds, just about everything that he wrote. Sometimes it's fairly brutal stuff, mm-hmm. especially flute, oboe, clarinet. They have such a plethora of notes. It's mm-hmm. just incredible at times. And the things that they're doing that may be underneath or above the melodic line to fit into it and complement it is just stunning, looking at the technique involved.
Mm-hmm. And some of the intonation things he throws at that same combination, too. Isn't it that it's pretty tricky stuff? But
yeah.
I know people have asked me, well, do you miss playing in the symphony? And I've had to honestly say one of the things, weirdly enough, that I most missed was playing the Nutcracker for the sheer joy of that.
And we have a theory
yeah.
that virtually everything that Tchaikovsky wrote could be traced back to the Nutcracker mm-hmm. and or has gone into creating the Nutcracker. Mm-hmm. It's the Nutcracker theory.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very valid theory, and you've had plenty of hours of Nutcracker to think up that theory and look for look for the proof of it. Bar 32 of this is that comes from the Fourth Symphony.
Yep, exactly.
Because one certainly can hear so many Nutcracker licks and so much other Tchaikovsky that one hears. So there's that. So it's a well-known and a lesser-known Tchaikovsky that you're playing this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Hamlet you probably haven't played much, have you?
No, and it's a challenge. It's a challenge. It's one of those notey kinds of pieces, and I think it's very rewarding. He decided that once wasn't enough. So just because you've done it once doesn't mean that you can't do it again towards the end of the piece. So making it through two massive pages of notes, you're not off the hook yet. You have to come back and do it towards the end as well. Yeah. But yeah, it's beautiful. It's absolutely Tchaikovsky. Mm-hmm. All the things that we love about Tchaikovsky are there.
And then there's just kind of an easy exhalation when you get to play something like Romeo and Juliet, isn't there? Just because you simply know it so well.
There is. It doesn't make intonation any easier.
No.
By any means. But yeah, it's just gorgeous music.
But you at least know what the challenges and traps are going to be.
Yes.
That's one thing about something that you've played a lot.
Yeah.
Then the cellist Josh Roman, because we need to mention that both my guest Lynn Feller Marshall, and who has created Bassoonorama, and then her husband John has created Cellobration, Bassoonorama coming up here in a month, and Cellobration having happened about a month ago. Talk about all the cello world that your married life has brought you into.
It's a great world. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous instrument. It is my number one favorite instrument, still, after all these years. And we first met Josh Roman when he was still in the Seattle Symphony.
At the age of 23 something.
Oh, golly, yeah.
Young like that.
Yeah, very young. But a fantastic player. I mean, absolutely no doubt of that. And he came and was John's guest at Cellobration, which was a lot of fun. John kind of jumped on it, as he often does. Mm-hmm. He saw a chance to have somebody come, especially without having to pay for a plane flight for a human and a cello from Florida or New York or something. Mm-hmm. So while he was still in Seattle, he said, oh, please, you got to come and do this. It would be great. And he was so enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. He was wonderful.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, because Cellobration depends on somebody that really wants to embrace having 50 cellists of literally every playing ability on the stage and make it work. Let's hear just a moment, about half a minute, of one of the Bartok duets that John Marshall and Josh Roman played at that 2007 Cellobration. That really hear all the energy and joy right there in those few seconds. So Josh Roman is coming back to play the symphony, this piece. I think he was supposed to play it a year ago, then didn't he get hurt his hand or some strange story like that?
Yeah, I don't remember the particulars.
Yeah, and so here he is back to play the piece that Spokane was among those to commission. And I've heard you haven't played it with him yet, but you've certainly rehearsed the notes of it. It's a pretty tricky piece, isn't it?
It is. Some of us were sitting back there last night thinking, this is actually kind of a cool-sounding piece even without the solo line. So I can't imagine. I mean, with the solo line, it'll be fantastic. Definitely some jazz idiom sneaking in there, especially the third movement. Mm-hmm.
Well, and Josh Roman himself, isn't he also a composer and an innovator and an improviser and all these things?
Yep.
So he would live pretty happily in that world. Let's take a minute to talk about this unique focus that Eckhart Proye has brought to the Spokane Symphony, because it's been pretty fascinating how bravely he has taken on contemporary music for a lot of years. And some people are, should you really do that? And yet I sense that the audience has largely embraced it, don't you?
I do, particularly when they have some background. So between the program notes and Eckhart speaking to the audience, I think people, including the symphony, are better able to appreciate what it is that they're about to hear. Every once in a while, of course, there's going to be something that is just not as, it doesn't capture the audience as much as other pieces do. But largely, yeah, what we've seen is that people are kind of into it.
And how about the musicians? Because probably about the same amount of variation, isn't there, from piece to piece of whether it's felt satisfying or not?
Yeah, there is. Definitely. We're all human beings. There will always be pieces that just don't really ever consume us. I think for a lot of us, we'll begin the week, you know, the first run through, we're going, I don't know, boy. And then it will actually grow on us to the point where finally by the performance, you're pretty well convinced. You know, that's actually a decent piece. It wasn't, it certainly wasn't a bad piece and probably one that warrants being performed widely.
So that's been this unique focus of the Spokane Symphony. And then speaking of unique focus, you have a fun thing coming up in a week. What's that special concert coming along next weekend?
I think that'll be a blast. It's called Superheroes, Villains, and Sidekicks, or Heroes, Villains, and Sidekicks. It's going to be very similar to the Harry Potter concerts in the fall. So there'll be a lot of activities out in the lobby ahead of time. There's an online costume contest, which I only just became aware of. It sounds like a blast. There will be trivia out by the edge of the stage during the intermission, the Harry Potter trivia in the fall, which is a lot of fun. I believe some orchestra members will be dressed as various superheroes, and we'll be playing lots and lots of film score music, some very, very recognizable. There's going to be a tribute to Carrie Fisher because, I mean, we regard her as a heroine. And a lot of unusual ones. I mean, X-Men, I just have never played X-Men before. So, and some classics, of course. Superman, John Williams. Got to have the John Williams.
Of course. So what about this blending? What about this searching for new audiences? What about all these things the symphony has tried? Have they, do you think they have a pretty good track record on a lot of these experimental things they've done?
With doing things like this concert, it'll be on the 18th, and the Harry Potter concert, and future ones as well. I think there is definitely an attempt to capture the interest of younger audiences. So Comic-Con type things, people that would be attracted to that sort of thing, and kids, of course, they can go and they can find out that, yeah, actually, the symphony's kind of cool. And with these concerts in particular, it's more of an experience. It's not just walking into the concert hall, finding your seat, sitting down, and listening to music being played. There's more to it than that.
Yeah. So that's next weekend on the 18th. And then a month after that, March 18th, is when you'll have your Bassoonerama.
Yes, and that's so, right. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Is that an all-day thing at EWU?
It is. There's 4 o'clock concert. Generally, it's a pretty quick concert, about 4 to 5. And that way everybody can go and eat and enjoy their St. Patrick's Day weekend.
Oh, that's right.
And a couple other musical events going on that night later, too.
Oh, good. And do you typically, how many bassoonists are you able to find in the drivable area?
There's usually about 35 to 40. Wow. Every once in a while, a little bit more. Depends on the passes, too. When you've got 7 or 8 people coming over passes, it's a challenge.
Sure. Well, hopefully by then, since we're supposed to get Snoqualmie Pass opening at noon today. Lynn Filler Marshall, thank you for a lovely time spent with us.
Oh, thank you, Vern. It's great.
And so the principal bassoonist of the Spokane Symphony.